first case for argument is Trompler versus Labor Board. Ms. Tescott.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Marna Tess-Matner. I represent Trompler Incorporated, the employer, petitioner, and cross-respondent in this case. We are before the Court today on petition for review of an NLRB decision and the Board's cross-petition for enforcement of its decision. The Board found that the employer violated the Labor Relations Act when it fired six employees who walked off the job because they were angry at their supervisor. And as a result, that left the shift staffed by only one other employee plus the supervisor. Despite this Court's repeated holdings that employee walkouts in relation to a supervisor are not protected, including one as recently as December 1998 while this case was pending before the Board again chose to follow its own decisions and held that employees are permitted to walk off the job.
The Board characterized this as a dispute about the working conditions created or maintained by the supervisor. And why isn't that decision supported by substantial evidence?
Because the issue of the supervisor's identity is what is really at issue.
That's what you say, but the Board found otherwise, and our review is for substantial evidence. And so my question is, why isn't the Board's characterization supported by substantial evidence?
For a couple of reasons, Your Honor. One is that the circumstances at issue were not working conditions that were so dire that they really warranted.
That's a different question. Right, that's your argument that strikes have to be reasonable, as if labor relations were reasonable in general. But there are two distinct questions. First is whether this was protected conduct, and the second is whether there is a reasonableness requirement.
Right? Yes.
So let's address first, that's where you began. Why isn't the Board's conclusion that the walkout had to do with the working conditions supported by substantial evidence?
Well, because the working conditions they complained of changed throughout the period of the time that we were looking at.
But the Board made a very particularized finding of fact, indicating that they had expressed specific concerns about their supervisor's behavior, and the behavior affected the terms and conditions of employment.
That's true, Your Honor. They had expressed certain concerns, but management believed those concerns were all resolved. And the employees, even as of the time that they spoke with the company's president the day after the walkout, said,
"No." When are employees required to accept management's belief that everything is hunky-dory?
Well, they're not required to. Nobody's
exactly.
But
so management's belief that everything was just fine can't be conclusive on either the employees or the Board.
Were there any findings of fact made below regarding loss of business, customers, or profits due to the walkout?
I don't believe there were any findings of fact. There was testimony by the company's management that it shut down the shift for the remainder of the day, and I believe that was the extent of the evidence on that. The employees in this case, to address Judge Easterbrook's concern, did not indicate that they had any ongoing concern. They raised a variety of issues. They said they were concerned about the supervisor's ability to instruct them on CNC machining. They said that there was this ongoing concern about how a drug rehab issue was handled for a particular employee, and they were concerned about the conflicts that occurred about three times over a period of 3 or 4 months between two employees, the mother of the group of related employees and another employee.
Ms. Tess-Matter, would you concede that the walkout was not the first nor the only attempt by the employee to resolve the problems with the supervisor?
I would concede that they had raised various issues before with management.
Regarding this supervisor?
Yes. But whether it had been done so in a way that enabled management to address it is another matter. For example, when they presented a note to the plant manager saying we want to impeach our supervisor and put somebody else in one of our group in his place, that didn't really allow the company any opportunity to resolve the issue. Plus, the other key issue in this point, in this case, I believe, is the fact that the president of the company, whom they had all gone to frequently on their various personal and work-related concerns, was out of the country at the time. They knew she was coming back the next day. They knew that they could go to her and discuss all these matters in depth with her without disrupting the company's operation. But beyond that, the consistent holdings of the court have been that strikes or walkouts in connection with protests about supervisors are unreasonable and are unprotected, unless there are situations where employees are in imminent danger. And those kinds of situations simply don't exist in this case. The precipitating event in this case, even though the employees had all of these other issues that they raised at various times, was the fact that their supervisor allegedly complained about them to other management people during a management meeting, and that offended the employees. They said that was the icing on the cake. That's what triggered the walkout. Well, management complaints about employees to other management people simply is not a valid reason for people to walk out. On the other hand, even if the court would deem that that was a legitimate employee concern, the fact remains that a walkout under those circumstances is not reasonable and therefore is not protected. And because this was a drastic and intemperate and unprotected action, the employer was justified in firing him.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Young.
May I please report, Christopher Young, appearing on behalf of the National Labor Relations Board. The board decided this case really on two grounds. Came to the same result in each case, and we submit that both conclusions of the board are supported by substantial evidence. There clearly can be no doubt under the board's traditional test that this walkout in this case was not.
Dan, your position seems to be, you know, industrial anarchy. How do you have a situation where if the workers happen not to like a supervisor, they just drop everything and walk off?
No, Your Honor, that's not what we're maintaining at all.
You don't like our Bob Evans decision.
Well,
it would be perfectly reasonable. It just says, you know, you can't, you have to balance the interest in concerted activity of the workers against the disruption to the employer of having people just walk out in the middle of the shift.
Well, Your Honor, that's the statute solves that problem by promoting collective bargaining.
I think it solves the problem. I don't understand. You really think the statute is this, what I'm calling industrial anarchy, that any time some workers don't like a supervisor, they just leave?
But I don't. It would be a different question if that were the exclusive reason for employees to walk out. But when they walk out to affect their terms and conditions of employment, as they did here, then under Washington Aluminum, they have that protected right under the statute.
Well, they just didn't like a supervisor.
No, Your Honor, that's not the case here. They didn't like the fact that he was unable to control harassment in the workplace, that he was invaded Kovac's privacy with the
Did they tell all these things to the president of the employer when they walked out, when she fired
them? She wasn't there. They certainly had attempted.
But when she interviewed them the next day or whatever it was, did they tell her all these things?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the finding of the administrative law judge, and he discredited Trumpler's testimony that they did not explain the basis for the walkout. But prior to that, they had submitted the letter to Grammel on June 30th, where they put forward those concerns, and Grammel dismissed them. And then when they heard that Larry Marchand, had complained about the employees of the second shift in that management meeting. That was indeed the icing on the cake, that they had not been able to get there.
Don't they have to give notice before they walk out?
Excuse me?
Don't they have to give notice before they walk out?
No, Your Honor, they didn't give notice in Washington Aluminum. They have to make a demand in connection with the work stoppage, but they do not have to give prior notice. Again, that is the basis for having a collective bargaining agreement. The employer can reach some agreement with the employees that provide for such limitations on the right to strike. But that was not the case here, certainly. These were unorganized employees, and they reacted spontaneously to conditions as they perceived them in the shop.
I'd like to ask you a question about Bob Evans, because it seems to me that according to the opinion of Bob Evans, the board in that case argued that the means of protest are never relevant to a determination of whether concerted activity is protected.
That's how the court...
Does the board continue to take that position?
The board takes the position if there is a claim that the activity is unlawful, violent, in breach of contract, or indefensible, then certainly the means come under scrutiny in those categories. But otherwise, the board is not going to get into some sort of sliding scale measurement of the means relative to the end sought or relative.
Well, then you have changed your position since the argument in Bob Evans, it would seem.
No, Your Honor, I believe that's been consistently the board's position. The board follows the Washington...
You just said there was a safety exception.
Yes, Your Honor, that comes under...
Is that the only...
Well, no. Indefensible conduct, for example...
How's that different from Bob Evans? That just sounds like different
because words. In Bob Evans, the conduct there was really creation of an economic loss, when all strikes are designed to inflict economic loss. That can't be avoided. The question is whether employees go beyond that...
But you can wreck someone's business by walking out at a critical stage, and that's fine. That's your position?
Well, we would have to deal
position.
With... No, Your Honor. I'm saying in terms of...
Well, you
of
say economic loss is nothing, right? Economic loss is fine. Well, you could ruin a person's business by walking out at a critical moment, couldn't you?
Sure, that is always a risk in a strike, that an employer will have to get their customers back. The whole society faces that.
Well, I don't understand the rationality of it. I mean, you take it, a person, these people can't walk off the job and throw a wrench into the machinery, right? They can't.
That's
do
correct.
That.
That would be destruction of property.
Right.
And that
even
would
if they, so if they cause a loss of $5 by destroying property, it's not privileged. But if they cause a loss of millions of dollars by ruining a person's business, that's fine in your view, because that's just economic.
No, I'm not saying it's fine, Your Honor.
Say it's privilege.
I'm saying
the slightest physical damage forfeits the privilege, but immense economic loss does not. That's your position.
No, not.
See, it sounds irrational. It's not your position.
My position again is that there are some acts that may be regarded.
Yes, but you regard economic loss, however enormous, as not forfeiting the privilege of concerted action.
I can't conceive of it off the top of my head.
You can't what?
I can't conceive of it off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Why not?
Simply the mere, because that is a necessary consequence of a strike.
But how about magnitude? How about considerations of how...
Well, then that, presumably, those circumstances will help to bring the parties to the bargaining table and resolve the situation as quickly as possible.
Oh, yes, extortion will, of course.
Extortion. Certainly the right, the strike is not
a criminal. But what if the company has a contract And the contract requires it to complete performance by X date. And if it's a day late, it pays a penalty of $1 million. So the day before performance is due, the workers just walk off the job. And as a result, the firm doesn't complete performance and it loses $1 million. And you say, fine,
no,
because with that threat, the firm will knuckle under to the workers' demands.
No, so then, first of all, the employer could have written a better contract with his customer to have avoided that. That's correct. Because
there may be very good reasons to have deadlines. Maybe
But it could have an exception for labor strike. And
No one in their right minds would sign that contract.
Well, I don't know, Your Honor, but I do know that they are certainly in the steel industry and in where there are mature bargaining relationships, employers are able to deal with.
You're saying everyone should be unionized, then they have a contract.
No,
they're fine.
No. Well, I'm saying if that is the means of promoting collective bargaining, the statute sets up that regime.
But the statute is not supposed. The statute doesn't require all employers to have collective bargaining contracts.
No, it doesn't. But it does promote collective bargaining
by rejecting Bob Evans, you're coercing employers to sign collective bargaining agreements because otherwise they're at the mercy of utterly unpredictable
strikes. I don't think they were any more at the mercy than in East Chicago, Your Honor. I mean, those are simply the consequences, even though they may be at times be painful, of the industrial relations regime we have established. I see my time, so.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Young. Ms. Tess Matner, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to clarify that this was not a collective bargaining agreement situation. This is a non-unionized shop with only about 28 or 30 employees total. Secondly, I would like to point out that the reasons that were given at the time of the walkout, which are detailed in Joint Exhibit 3, were focused upon the fact that the employees were upset about what they heard the night before, which was that their boss, their supervisor, Larry Marchand, had complained about them in a management meeting. They also were concerned about the third shift supervisor. They called him a cancer in the company. So their concerns that precipitated the walkout were directly related to concerns about management issues, purely management issues, the identity or the behavior of two different supervisors, their supervisor and another supervisor on a different shift. That kind of intemperate behavior, walking out to protest that kind of issue, a supervisory management-related issue, is simply not protected, not only under Bob Evans, but under many other decisions of this court, going back to 1947, even, Reynolds International Pen, and many other cases in between. There have been consistent holdings by this court that walkouts over supervisors are not protected, and that should not be changed in this case. Certainly, there are protests over supervisors that are permitted. It is perfectly acceptable for employees to make known their concerns about their supervisors by less drastic measures, such as by sitting down with higher management, writing a letter to management as to what their concerns are. Those kinds of issues have been upheld by this court in cases such as Jasper Seating and Parlance Ambulance. That is legitimate expression of employee concern.
Is there anything more drastic? Because those writing letters and sitting down probably won't cut it in most of these cases.
Well, it may not in many cases, Your Honor, but the record is very clear that in this case it would have, because this particular president had been very responsive to these employees in the past and had even demoted another supervisor because employees complained about that supervisor, sent all the supervisors to management training, there has been a history of extreme responsiveness by this employer. So this isn't a situation where the employees had no expectation that they would get anywhere if they talked to the president of the company. All they had to do was wait one more day, and they could have talked to her, and they would have had their matters addressed by her. But instead, they walked out. In light of the court's many previous decisions holding that walkouts to protest, supervisors are not protected activity, I am respectfully asking on behalf of Trompler Incorporated that this court vacate the board's decision and that it deny enforcement of the board's decision, consistent with Bob Evans Farm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument.